This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Warning. The following podcast, which contains strong language and mature content, is unsuitable for children or for the faint of heart. The subject matter discussed will be frightening and graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
Three spooked girls.
When you want to hear about the paranormal, you get the spooked girls, true crime that makes you hypothermal, with the three spooked girls. Stabby snippets will give you dreams. Tara and Jessica will make you ask, along with the spooked girls. Bring on the slaughter. We on that haunted ground.
Spooked girls.
The three spooked girls.
Hey there, spooksters, and happy new year. It's your girl, Jessica. And before we get into this episode, I just want to let you know that this is a re-release of a patron episode that we did. This is my favorite patron episode of 2023. It is an OJ Simpson documentary. You know, we did like a million parts on him, but this was really good. Before we get into it, here's some information that you may need to know. If you're new here, welcome. We are so glad you're starting your new year off with us. If you are a returning spookster, welcome back and happy new year's. We're hoping that you guys have all of the good vibes and the good blessings of the new year. With that, if you want to hang out with us on social media, you can do so by heading over to Facebook, Instagram, or Threads. Our handle is at Three Spooked Girls. We also have a fantastic Facebook group. Tara and I were so lucky this holiday season that we got to meet Ashley, who's one of our admins. So definitely go in there and join. Say hello to everyone. Join the book club that's going on in there. Join the discussion threads on about different episodes. And also just the fun connectivity that we get to have with people who like the same things that we like. We also have a Patreon, which if you like this episode, please consider subscribing to. It is patreon.com/threespookedgirls. For little as a dollar, you get bonus episodes a month. Sometimes that means with December's, you got a video content. Also, five and up get video content more frequently. And if you liked our Vital Conversations segments, you can watch all of those and see the people we're talking to. So definitely check those out. If you are on the TikTok, definitely check out Tara's. Her handle is spooky_sleuth. She has fantastic content. If you love this content, definitely check it out. And we're going to get into this episode. Again, this is my favorite patron episode of 2023. So I hope you enjoy.
We're going to be doing a review / talking about / just word vomiting about the documentary O.J. Simpson : Blood, Lies, and Murder.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. Blood, Lies, and Murder.
Yeah.
I will say that sometimes I kind of wish they did this with all cases.
Yes. I was thinking that too.
Like how in depth they went in. But I'm going to trigger warn everyone right now.
Oh my God, it's so bad.
If you cannot handle seeing actual autopsy photos of Nicole and Ron and like their wounds up close.
Yeah.
This is not the documentary for you.
No.
Or just be prepared that you might have to like.
Like look away or.
Yeah.
You know, something. Get up for a minute, skip ahead.
If you remember from the documentary, we talked about a specific gentleman a lot.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Tom Lang. He was the homicide detective on the case. He was the primary. And overall, he was a homicide detective for 29 years.
That's almost my whole life.
I was like, there are listeners right now who have like, they're like, I'm not even 20.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Like when I hear about people being like married for years longer than I've been alive, I'm always just like, that's so trippy.
Right.
But anyway, so he's the primary. He's done over 250 homicide cases. It is also noted right away in the documentary. It starts off with the car chase, but they talk about the fact that like Van Adder, who is the other William Van Adder, and then Tom, they had a gag order. They were never allowed to address the public in regards to the O.J. Simpson case.
Mm-hmm.
that kind of sucks for them.
Yeah.
The style of this is very like Forensic Files meets
like Criminal Minds almost.
Yes. Kind of Criminal Minds, because it's like the early years when like what's his face was on. Mandy Patinkin's character. I'll think of it later.
It's okay. I was like, I've only watched a couple episodes.
I love this show and I can't remember. God, fucking ADHD brain. You go to pull something out and you're like,
it's like, nope, it's gone. Yeah. No, you're fine.
So the opening scene of this is like the slow ass Bronco chase. In fact, they make a comment about it. They were like, oh, the slow chase?
The slow chase.
At some point in that, yes. I was like, that's funny.
Oh my God.
So it starts with Lang, who was the one on the phone with OJ when he was in the Bronco. And so you hear a lot of more of the dialogue than I've heard before.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's the famous, like, throw the gun out, those type of things.
Right. But
also, it's like talking about the fact that, like, he's like talking to OJ, just kind of like, oh, okay, you're still there. Like, it's just like kind of a conversation that I didn't think was happening, but.
Yeah, and then, like, basically, I think he had said something about, you know, just, like, being like, hey, bye. He was like, you don't want to do that. Like, that's not a good idea. Like, you know, he was, it's a lot more than, like, we previously had seen ever, I think.
Right.
And we consume so much OJ shit.
I know. And I like that Tom Lang, he developed a good rapport.
Yeah.
With OJ, and, like, he really reached into him to be like, come on, dude. Like, stay with us. I think he definitely knows how to kind of curate the response he wants as a detective. So, So one of the big things to note with the OJ Simpson trial is that there was a lot of evidence that was not used, that was collected and not used.
So much.
So you have to remember that this is the time, like, right after the Rodney King riots, there's all of this, like, pent up racial energy in the air. And DA's office was really feeling that. This is why Lang thinks that Marcia Clark didn't put a lot of evidence through, because of the fact that their kind of main narrative was that the LAPD was on trial for this case.
Mm.
Hey, guys, I just want to put it like interjection, like time out for a second.
Because we just had mayhem.
I have cats who have yet to settle into their personalities, and we want to get through this with you guys. We have a lot of stuff, so we're going to try to power through, but my cats are being
mischievous.
Thank you. My cats are being extra mischievous tonight, and so there's nothing I can really do. I apologize if you're crinkling in the background. It's either that or they're going to sit on the other side of the door and scream at you guys.
Yeah.
And they have learned their big boy and girl voices now.
Oh, so they extra
it's
loud.
Great.
But it'll be okay. It'll be okay.
Hades did it for the first time tonight. He looked at me and screams. And I was like,
what the fuck?
I was like, your food is in my hand.
That's so scary. Yeah.
I know. It's like, he's so big. So Marcia Clark did not want to put all of the evidence and submit it into trial because a lot of it was collected by the LAPD. And they were like, this is a black man being tried by the Los Angeles DA who works with the Los Angeles PD, and we can't be in bed with them.
Right. Right.
That's why Tom Lang believes that a lot of the evidence wasn't submitted.
Mm-hmm.
We also meet a very fun woman by the name of Michelle Kessler.
Yes.
She is like a criminologist.
So cool. I liked her.
She's amazing. She also worked on the Hillside Strangler and the Richard Ramirez, or as Tara calls him, Poop Mouth.
Stank Breath.
Stank Breath. That's right. My bad. And it was funny because she goes, and obviously the OJ.
We're like, okay, duh, like, you're here on this documentary.
This is your documentary.
No, you know what else I liked about her too? Was when they were looking at pictures and she's like, oh yeah, my hair used to be red.
I love that. I mean, she was beautiful. She had beautiful white hair, but it was just I was like, oh, she was a redhead.
Ginger, yeah.
We also get to hear from Alan Park, who was the limo driver that night. And we get to talk to a person who I personally want to invite to every party I have, Rod Englert, I think is how you say his last name. He is a crime scene reconstructionist.
Oh my God. Yes. So cool.
This is why I want him. Like, could you imagine like every like Halloween party I throw?
No, you know what? No. Not even that. Like, for a murder mystery party, for whatever the story is.
I love that.
Right?
But yeah, he's really cool. And he was brought into this case to specifically analyze the blood patterns. We also, Cato Kalin will be making an appearance as a full grown-up.
Woo, he's an adult now, okay?
Yeah, he a full grown-up. Actually, like, I want to talk about his parts. Like, when they're, like, doing the flashback to that time, he was so funny.
Yes!
Like, people were like, are you going to write a book? And he's like, maybe a coloring book. He's like, do you have crayons? And I was like, oh my God, Cato, you're fucking hilarious. No wonder Nicole kept you around.
Right? Shit.
He was so funny. So Rod would rebuild this crime scene. He got the measurements of like the steps coming down. He also got like where the fence was so that he could accurately depict what happened. He had two actors, a woman who was Nicole's height, even hair color, and then a gentleman who looked like Ron.
Yeah, he did. That was weird.
I was like, part of me was like, I really hope Kim Goldman never watches that, or Fred Goldman never watched that, because it'd be like watching what actually happened to their son, because the portrayer was like the same hair, same mm-hmm. build.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess does really help with the reenacting of it.
True. Especially for like the hair, because like how Nicole's hair was.
Mm-hmm. So they did this. How they did the lining up of it is they took the crime scene photos, they took the autopsy, and then they like rebuilt this. Nicole was stabbed in the head twice. So like literally the actress is walking down and he's like, stab, stab. And then he said that Nicole was stabbed in like the neck, throat area four times, and they punctured her heart. So that's like how long that knife was.
God, horrific.
I was like, damn.
Yeah.
He was talking about how much blood Nicole bled like out, and how they think she was up on the first step for a period of time because the blood was gushing onto the step. And then they were like, okay, this is where Ron gets involved. One, because of how the blood moved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Nicole is bleeding out and they're fighting and stepping into the blood yep. and everything like that.
And the transfer on the shirt, everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one thing that was really sad is they made it sound like the very first stab wound Ron received was his, like, would have been a fatal stab wound.
Oof.
Remember when he said that? He's like, it's a fatal stab wound. I was like, yeah. So he was like basically up and fighting like against odds.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting. This documentary goes into the blood patterns a lot. And so we'll dive into that in a little bit. But that's kind of like where they start seeing like, okay, this is where the blood was. Later in the documentary, they do a reenactment of this and the people are in white. It was so interesting to me, like, how much the killer had very little blood on them.
Yeah.
But not the victims. They talk about how, like, OJ and Ron fought and how the glove would come off. Basically, it's that OJ's arm was around his neck and he was, like, trying to cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's right-handed, so he's, like, left arm and he's, like, trying to cut his throat.
Yeah.
And, like, Ron and him are fighting, so he probably just pulled the glove off then. Most of Ron's like wounds were he was fighting.
Yeah.
There's this one where they talk about it was like in his neck and it was like it's called like a swallowtail.
Oof.
Yeah. It was terrible. They do everything from like Ron dropping the pager, the glove, the glasses. They talk about the keys.
Oh, the keys. Oh my God.
I know.
Fucking OJ, man.
So one of the things I didn't know, but watching this documentary, when OJ was trying to like cut like or stab Ron in the beginning with his arm up, there were like indentations or like tinier cut marks or like not as deep on his neck that OJ was unsuccessful. And then they're like fighting and then like Tara says the hat comes off.
Mm-hmm.
And then they really start talking a lot of this. They're going to talk about the prosecution's wanting to distance themselves from the LAPD evidence. And like, that's why a lot of it wasn't put in. But this is the thing I can't understand. Like, to be really honest, like thinking about this,
mm-hmm.
and maybe this is my elevated state of thought, but like Marsha Clark was like, I don't want to use a lot of the LAPD evidence, but I'm going to put Mark Furman on the fucking...
Bro, like, she picked the wrong shit. If she had picked the fucking blood in the Bronco, they could have had these homies that were in the documentary. Like...
Right. Ugh. But she was like, I'm going to pick all the dumb shit, like the glove.
I'm going to pick the racist piece of shit cop. So here we go. Yay. Perfect.
Right.
that's what's explained in this too. It's not like, you know, you could just submit it and then be like, okay, cool, here's our evidence. Like, they have to take the stand.
Right. Basically, they keep talking about the, like, how the attack happened. Mm-hmm. They think that OJ, when he was stabbing him, eventually like got him up against the tree and he was like on his side, and there were marks on his face that like indicate that he hit it on the tree. Mm-hmm. And there were like drips of his blood.
Yeah.
So basically he cuts Nicole's throat and then he cuts Ron's throat, and then he goes back over to Nicole and he steps on her. Which I was like, the fuck?
Fucking disgusting.
Right. And then he leaves. All of this is coming from the memory of one Mr. Tom Lang, who has a journal. His journal is in a law enforcement museum, because, I mean, it's literally the detective who worked on the O.J. Simpson case.
Right.
And I think it's like 400 and something pages.
Oh, wow.
So they were basically going through all the evidence. Rod is talking about the blood droplets. And one of the biggest problems with the O.J. Simpson case, and I mentioned this when we were doing it, is because of the fact that the coroner's investigator broke their leg, there was no criminologist there. The like coroner's assistant just washed the body. Could you imagine like if there had been OJ's blood in Nicole's wounds?
I get it was, you know,
it was an accident.
The 90s and an accident, but I'm just like, it's common sense. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, they did not look like they were in a car accident. So I would have been like, I don't know yet. I'd have called someone.
Exactly.
But there was kind of a shining hope, is that Ron's boot had a droplet on it and it contained a mixture of like pretty much everyone's blood. And they don't know if it was like from his hand dripping or if it was like from the knife cast off, but like it's still like right there.
Yeah.
It puts OJ's DNA on a murder victim.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is the shoe pattern. There was a big ass size 12. Bruno Mali's impression. They talk about Dominic Brown, who was not called to the stand. Denise Brown was. And Dominic is the one who connected the fact that like OJ wore Bruno Mali's and the fact that Nicole owned some too. And in fact, she was wearing the shoes because her sister was like, oh, I don't want these anymore. You can have them. So it was like a brand that Nicole loved,
yeah,
or liked. And so did OJ.
Right.
Oh, this was the saddest part when they were talking about the beeper. Oh, and they were like, yes, kept going off because his friends were like, where the fuck are you? That just made me so sad. Ron had, like, he was stabbed, I think he was stabbed 29 times, if I can recall. 30 times, yeah. And he had 20 different wound sizes. Like, the stab wounds were that varied.
Oh, jeez.
Something I liked that they were like, there's like 8 million people in LA and there was only three places where all three people's DNA was. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, damn. Then they start talking about like why maybe the prosecution didn't want to use any of like Rod's stuff. And they kind of implied that the defense went out there and were like telling people that he was like a child molester.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I was very unsatisfied that they were like, they dropped that and then just didn't explain. They were opening statementing it. They were like, this is what happened, and then we're never going to address it. But yeah, because he was like a youth leader in like a local church. And so they were like interviewing people in his life about how he was he being inappropriate with kids. Mm-hmm. So they were like trying to frame this. Another thing the defense did is basically Ron had driven there in his girlfriend's car. And when they moved the body, they found the keys. But there was no blood on the keys. They had gone, they had been processed, and then they were given back to the girlfriend, who then went around telling people that the keys were all bloody, which for attention, I don't know. The defense was like, oh, they washed away the real killer's DNA. The defense was like, it's a straw, we gonna grasp it. And they did it quite successfully, actually. The thing that keeps tripping everyone up is there is no other evidence that points to another person.
Yeah.
One in 170 million people.
Insane.
There's no other person that they're like, yep, that's the one. At this point in the documentary, Michelle comes and she talks about all of the evidence in the Bronco. She talked about it for a little bit, but then they started talking about like when the sun came up, more evidence came. I didn't know this until I watched this documentary, but OJ had said he took a shower. And I was always like, why didn't they test the shower drain? They had tested both the shower drain, the soap, and the sink in addition. And they found blood in all of them. And I was like, okay. The defense basically says this is how they kind of word it. There's a second suspect. No evidence ever points anywhere else. The cops planted the evidence, but they can't tell you how. And the lab helped plant evidence, but there's no particular way they could, the way they did it.
No, absolutely no.
And I guess one of the things the defense really pushed hard on was, you know, all the evidence was pretty much collected in the first, like, less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it was only like a couple pieces of evidence that were found later. And those were either found like at OJ's house or the one droplet that they, the defense says was planted at Bundy because they couldn't find it in one picture.
Right.
And I was like, okay, because we've never heard of shadows.
Never.
Right. But one of the things the defense was like, the socks were planted because there's a video of after they process the scene. And I guess they do this so that someone can't be like, well, they came in and trashed my house.
Mm. Yeah, that does make sense.
Which makes sense that like you're leaving someone's home that's a crime scene and you're like, we left it like this. And the socks weren't on the floor anymore.
Right. Because they took them into fucking evidence.
Yeah, I was like, but they're in the evidence locker.
Like, literally.
The defense didn't know. Like, one of the interesting things is, like, we learned that, like, the defense didn't even know where the body was. Like, when they went out there with Rod, they were like, oh, so they were up by the door. And he was like, no, they were there and there. And they were like, oh, and like none of them took notes. So it wasn't important to them. And they just like smiled and waved for cameras. Showboat.
Mm-hmm.
The defense wasn't interested in the truth. They were interested in like how they could spin their story. So there was one of the interesting things is there was so much more blood in the Bronco than I thought there was. Like, I just thought it was like on the door handle and then like on a couple places. But this vehicle was basically like The Shining. It was just full of blood.
Oh my God. So much. I'm like, bitch, why did you not pick the Bronco?
Right?
That would have been all she needed. I mean, obviously other stuff, but like, you know what I mean? Like your main thing.
I mean, that's what they said that on the documentary. They were like, literally, there are prosecutors out there who would be just happy to get the evidence they found in just the Bronco.
Exactly.
Because it put all three people involved.
Yes.
In one location and it's their fucking blood.
Right. And he wasn't friends with Ron, so his blood should not have been in his car.
Right. At all. So the defense stated that they were, that the more evidence that they uncovered in the Bronco was more evidence that they were planting against them. But it takes time to process something. Like, if you're good at your job, it's not like you're going to walk out in one day and process an entire car.
Right.
It's going to take you like several weeks. Michelle was talking about how when she would like be on the stand, she would look over at the jurors and they weren't really paying attention. Like, some of them were taking notes. Most of the time they were like laughing and joking with each other.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I couldn't believe Ito let that happen. She's like, I couldn't believe the prosecution let it happen.
Right.
And I honestly think that Marcia Clark's ego and her divorce got in the way of this case.
100%.
They talk about the evidence that's found in the Bronco, but like the Bronco, the one that's involved in the chase.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, oh goodness, that had the disguise kit in it, which was purchased 2 weeks prior to the murder. An interesting thing is in his possessions, they find keys. And Nicole had gone to her mom about 10 days before the murder happened and said, hey, mom, I think OJ stole a set of my keys.
So fucking scary.
And the keys were to the gate and the front door. It's so interesting to me that like almost none of the evidence in the Bronco was used. It was basically what Mark Furman found.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even well explained. Like, the way that Rod explains it makes so much sense. Like, O.J. Simpson had a cut on his left middle finger. And he gets a glove on and he smears his, like, left middle finger with blood. And, you know, he shows, like, how you could open it with a right hand. But this is probably really awkward. But this is what it would look like if you opened it properly with your left hand. And the mark that he makes on that Bronco.
Exact.
Is the same exact mark as O.J. Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a little thicker, but it's in the same location.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And where the knife, like, you can see where the knife was laying because of the edge of the blade in the blood. It's on the seat. And there was a hair. They took 39 of them from Ron's shirt, but she had like 40 hairs that had been cut. And the 40th was in the fucking Bronco.
My God.
Right? None of this. None of that admitted in court.
None.
Also, one of the interesting things is that in the car the dimmer light, it had been removed. Like, they had popped the thing off, screwed a different light bulb in so that they wouldn't be illuminated.
Right.
There were also points in the car where, like, OJ had, like, bled on the steering wheel. On the seat, there were smears of, like, Nicole's blood along, like, how you would get in a Bronco, you know, mm-hmm. like, legs up and over. And then there was her blood on the door panel. And then Ron and Nicole and OJ's, all their blood was all mixed up in the center console. Then they talk about the evidence at Rockingham with the socks, which is a big thing because Alan Dershowitz or whatever, or I wrote Alan is a dick instead of Dershowitz. I thought I was being funny earlier. I was at work doing my notes and I was like, I'm so clever. But basically he said that Van Adder had like poured the blood onto the sock and framed OJ. Like that was what it was. Because they did talk about this. They did talk about her blood and his blood being on the sock. They talked about that in court, but they didn't talk about the blood spatter pattern. Because the way it is, like, and they do the demonstration of it. And they can recreate this pattern by like stomping around in blood and fighting the way that they do. It's interesting that Alan brought up that like Van Adder did it because Van Adder's deceased.
Yeah.
And so it's like, who's going to argue?
Right.
Lang, of course, Lang's going to protect his partner, but there's no one to stand up and be like, I didn't do that. Except for the fact that Rod is so cool. He's like, actually, let me show you how you're wrong. He talks about the difference between like a transfer and a blood spatter. So like transfer is if I had something on my hand and I touch Tara and she gets what it's on my hand on her.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the blood transfer that they talk about. But the splatter is when, like, if I stepped in a puddle, it would, like,
right.
splash up. And they were talking about how those have, like, inconsistencies. They talk about the fact that, like, OJ, you know, his socks would have had that. And then they cut to Cato, which I love. I do love him in this documentary. Because you just can tell that he's just been, like, I've lived with this for so many years. Apparently, at one point in time, Cato was a suspect. He was, like, suspect number 300 and something. And before, like, OJ, which I know this is really fast, they had pinned it down to, like, 150 credible, like, suspects.
Something like that, yeah.
I just thought it was really funny because when Cato read his score, he had, like, a low score of being the suspect. And he was like, oh, cool, I got a 3. But they talk about, like, OJ had been seen wearing the knit cap before when spying on Nicole. They talked about that.
Yeah.
But something I didn't know is that when they got into Cato's house, which I thought that was a really interesting... Cato must have been a pothead.
Oh, 100%. 100%. No question.
Because he's like, I was a little like, you know, out of it. I was like, because it was 5 in the... I mean, granted, it was 5 in the morning, but still. He was like, it was 5 in the morning and I opened the door and there are 4 guys outside who were like, we're cops. Can we come in? And he's like, I just said yes. I was like, oh, you were high.
Mm-hmm.
That's a high decision.
For sure.
And so they were like, where are the clothes you were wearing yesterday? And Cato just started answering questions. He's like, they're on that chair. And they like took his clothes into evidence.
Okay.
And I was like, that's an interesting moment. I didn't know that. Then they, in the documentary, they shift to like OJ being interviewed by Lang and Van Adder. And the part that I find really weird is that if I was accused of murder and I had a giant fucking cut on my middle finger, my answer would be like, I don't know, man.
Right.
I cut it and keep changing it. I would be like, I got this with this specific knife or this. I would know that moment. And this is a girl who currently has a bruise. She doesn't know how she got. I'm just like, I would know the exact moment I cut my finger. And the fact that he can't answer that question straight, he's feeling out what excuse they're going to buy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think OJ Simpson is stupid. Like,
no.
I want to go on record. I don't think he's stupid at all. I think he fucking tried to mastermind a murder and Ron Goldman got in his way.
Yep, for sure.
I think if Ron Goldman hadn't been like there,
mm-hmm.
OJ probably would have gotten away with it a lot better.
Oh for sure.
Another interesting thing is I knew this, but like for some reason it just kind of like hit me. It's always weird to me that OJ offered up his blood. I think we talked about this, and it's like it's such a weird thing because then they have your DNA.
Exactly.
You cocky fucker didn't think you left any. But, like, you left a glove, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is, at one point in time, he admits that he cut his finger at that night.
Mm-hmm.
He, well, and I think the reason was, is he's like, oh, I cut it in Chicago when I threw a glass, but they're like, we found blood at your house and the story had to change. He actually gave one definitive answer, and if they'd been paying attention, they could have kept bringing it back to it. Like, how did you cut your finger that night? You remember cutting your finger that night. How did you cut your finger?
Mm-hmm.
But they just like skirted over that. So I'm not going to let Tom Lang off the hook entirely for this.
No.
It was said that Ron had 29 defensive wounds and one non-defensive wound. The one non-defensive wound is when he was basically passed out dead and OJ slit his throat. They could tell that Ron had stayed up for a really long time because of how saturated his pants were. He was bleeding a ton from his abdomen and it literally soaked both sides. So they were like, if he had fallen down right away, like some people were like, oh, he was on the ground the whole time. It would have only been on like one side. They think he was up for a really long time. And then OJ got him to the ground and like basically he was like against the fence. And then they talk about like, so then this is where like Ron... that he leaves Ron and goes and cuts Nicole's throat and how like, and I'm going to, again, trigger warning right now. Like if you're watching the documentary, this is where you're going to see Nicole's like vertebrae.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. That
was, you're going to see it a lot during this, but like it's definitely popping up right there. And then they say like, okay, this is how he cut Ron's throat. So it makes sense that he went and cut Nicole's throat and then cut Ron's throat because there's the transfer of hair that OJ cut. The thing that pisses me off so much, it's even more than like the murders, and I know that this might seem really fucking trivial, but like OJ stomped on Nicole and it bruised, so they think she was still alive. I mean, she had to be still alive because you don't bruise, like once your heart starts beating you don't bruise,
right?
And so it was like she had the faintest of like a heartbeat, they think, and she had that gushing wound in her throat. And so they're like, and the thing that made me so sad was like, this is the last thing that happened to her when she was alive.
Right.
They like start to talk about it and then they're like, nope. So even the, you know, the big bad detectives get a little choked up.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, none of Ron was not stabbed in his back at all, but he had 5 cut wounds in the back of his shirt, which indicated that he had been struggling and that his, you know, like if you're like struggling in your shirt, you can basically pull the back to the side. That's what was happening. They know he was up against the fence because when OJ like pulls him over, you can see like the twisting motion and you can basically see the outline of fingers. And I was like, why didn't they like compare that to OJ Simpson?
Right.
I also was like, did they look to see if there was any DNA in any of the twists that like could have come from his middle finger? An interesting thing is Tom Lang, you know, he goes down in history as the cop from Simi Valley that Johnny Cochran implies OJ's shoes there so that blood could be like put on them. And they literally had Carl Douglas, who's one of Johnny Cochran's lawyers, follow him around like on a Sunday, March 12th, taking daughter to Sunday school, sees Carl Douglas. I'm like, Jesus, that dire, that journal is intense.
Right.
They bring up again that they were the only two people in the case who had a gag order. They were not allowed to talk about it. Like, legally, they could not talk about it because mm-hmm. if they talked about it, they'd be unethical.
Yeah.
Those lawyers be lawyering well. Just being real. This is where they start talking about Alan Park, and he gives a time frame. At 10:43 for a 10:45 pickup, Alan calls the main house. There's no response. It rings. No response. He hangs up. About a minute later, 10:44, he calls again. No answer. 2 minutes later, he calls again. And as at 10:46, and as this is happening, he sees a tall, like a dark figure walk across the driveway, which we know is OJ Simpson.
Right.
I think it's interesting that there's that one part of the trial where he goes, 6'2", she'd have been a real pretty big woman. Because that's what they were implying, is that like they saw like the maid, the housekeeper or someone like that. Alan talks about how he saw a dark figure go into the house, and then Cato comes out and lets him in. And then he and Cato are talking about, well, really, Cato is high and is like, did you hear the earthquake? I don't know why everyone's like, I don't know why Cato was asking me this. I'm like, dude was so fucking loaded. You can't tell me otherwise. That doesn't mean he doesn't remember what happened.
Right, exactly.
I think Cato was tripping. bit. It was interesting that like OJ was like agitated and sweaty.
Yeah.
And they were like, he just got out of the shower. And it wasn't like hot out or anything. Like Alan was like, I was literally in like a suit and I was fine. And OJ was in like a polo. He talks about how there was this black bag. OJ wouldn't let Kato go get it for him. He went and got it. He wouldn't let Alan take it. And then he sees him put it in the trash bin and shove it down.
Yup.
And he tells them this. Interestingly enough, I did not know this. This is a fun fact. He tells us that Bob Shapiro and Skip Taft, who are OJ's lawyers, contacted Alan before the prosecution did. And they illegally recorded their conversation with him, which I thought was interesting. And this was not brought up in court. And you're like, well, maybe Marcia Clark didn't know. Alan found out and listened to the tape with Marcia Clark.
This woman.
And the end part of this, Alan hangs up, right? And Shapiro turns or says to Bob Taft while it's still on the phone, because he's a fucking idiot. And which I'm sure he put like interview with Alan Park, and they were like, oh, you sat for an interview. And he was like, nah, I think that's exactly how it happened. But at the end of the call, they're like, OJ, oh, that's not what OJ said. OJ said that happened differently. And I'm like, so basically on this tape, you're telling us that your own client is lying to you.
Yep.
And Marcia Clark didn't fucking put this, like, that's not even the LAPD. That's fucking the defense. Like, you didn't even fuck over the defense. Screw the whole being close to, you know, being in bed with the LAPD. That's just, that's damn good evidence.
Legit.
Like, even his lawyers. So that just blew my mind. Mm-hmm. They also jump back at this point to talk about Rod and his blood analysis for this case. And he actually got a dog to run around in animal blood the way that, like,
the dog did.
They think, yeah. Kato the dog did, not Kato the human.
Mm-hmm.
I just also, in OJ's book, If I Did It, like, when he talks about Kato, he makes Kato sound like everyone hated him.
And that was totally not the case.
But the kids loved him so much, they named their dog after him.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, they hated Kato. Mm. It's like, if you're gonna lie, lie about things people can't fact check.
Literally.
Another one thing I love is that they talk about this story, and Tom Lang, you can just tell he's super happy and proud of his pettiness. Basically, there are these like teenagers selling shirts out front of the courthouse that said like free OJ, or like he's being set up or whatever, like just different things and different shirts. Mm-hmm. And I guess Tom talked to them pretty regularly, and they were like, you know, the longer you keep him in there, the more money we make selling these shirts. And so they had like kind of developed maybe like a banter.
Mm-hmm.
And a reporter came up to Lang and was like, who are those guys? Who are you talking to? And basically, he told the reporter that they were like witnesses that the prosecution is trying to convince to bring in to speak. And this news outlet like ran with the story.
Oh my God.
And they're just like, they would she not walk up and like be like, why are you here? To the four teenagers selling t-shirts.
Right.
I was like, she dumb. Mm. She real dumb. But she, you know, but he looks so proud of himself.
Yeah, I agree.
Something that kind of brought me a little bit of solace at this point is they talk about how quick it was for Nicole. They don't think she was conscious more than a few seconds, like after she was stabbed.
Yeah.
In the head. And I'm like, I'm sure like being stabbed in your brain with a long ass knife kind of ends a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was 512 clues
that they didn't use.
512. This was a I get that this was like a 9-month process for the jurors, but like, this is the evidence that would have gotten you a conviction.
Exactly.
They were talking about hair samples because like the defense was like, we want everyone's hair samples. And Joe Lang, he's always kind of had like that like accountant haircut. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you think of like a cartoon accountant, like how they only have hair on the sides of their head
mm-hmm.
and it's bald on top. He's like, I was afraid of being held in contempt because I don't even think I had 40. And I was like, that's so funny. I love that. The cops all had to give blood samples too. Like, I didn't know that. That's crazy. When in what case have they ever been like, we need all the cops to give their blood?
No.
I'm just like, that's so weird. And yeah, it just irritated me because the defense could run around and say everything that they wanted to.
Yep.
And Van Atter and Lang couldn't say shit. So they couldn't even publicly defend themselves.
Mm-mm.
They do a recreation where I think we talked about this a little bit ago. The reenactors were in all white.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells the guy who's playing the attacker to go at him hard. And that, you know, they told the other guy, like, fight back. And it took him 12 seconds to get 30 stabs in. 12 seconds.
So scary, like, how fast that can happen.
I'm, like, trying to think of, like, how long 12 seconds is. Like, I'm watching the timer and our recording going, and I'm like, it's so long sometimes.
It's, like, so long but so quick.
Yeah. And then they were talking about how it was a revenge killing. This wasn't because OJ needed to get his jollies off or anything like that. This was because he was mad at Nicole and he wanted to teach her the ultimate lesson.
Yep, 100%.
I mean, I honestly think that he stole her keys and, like, he had been planning it.
Oh, for sure.
And that's the thing. That shit showed premeditation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that shit showed, like, I had the foresight to go buy, like, a beard disguise kit. I bought a fake knife to, like, throw people off. And then I knew would be suspicious, so I told my defense team about it.
Mm-hmm.
I stole my ex-wife's keys. Like, he basically was going to walk into her house and murder her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I do think that Ron was already there.
Yeah.
I do think, like, he was either going to walk up and do this, because otherwise I think OJ would have just gone into the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were like, he rang the doorbell and she came out. I don't think that happened. No. I think Ron caught him, like, basically sneaking into Nicole's house.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that they show when they do this reenactment with the white clothing,
mm-hmm,
is how much blood gets on the victims versus that gets on the killer. It's, like, not a lot.
It's so scary. Yeah.
The killer, basically, it's their feet and their hands and their shins,
mm-hmm,
but not their face. It's like in movies, we see this recreation where it's like, you know, the killer stabs someone like 5 times and they're covered in blood.
Yeah.
But that's because it wouldn't be as dramatic.
Right. Exactly.
And none of this shit was used in court.
That's what blows my fucking mind. I'm like, you set yourself up for failure, meaning the prosecution.
Right. At this point, like, the one thing I was thinking at the end of this documentary is, like, fuck, I kind of wish they had gotten a retrial, like a mistrial, because if they had gotten a mistrial, then, like, then they could have gotten a, like, district attorneys to fucking, mm-hmm, actually do this. Like, I do think this was, like, just a clusterfuck of time for people. Like, we're talking about, yeah, the Menendez case is happening kind of simultaneously. So the DA's office is split, you know, on, like, 2 really big cases.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's just, like,
just a lot.
Right? After looking at this, like,
she's an idiot.
It's either she's an idiot because she let her ego get in the way of Salt, like,
yeah,
really bringing justice, or she really was incompetent at her job.
Yeah. And it could even be both.
Right. I'm pretty sure that, like, newbie prosecutors would love the evidence they had.
Right? So much.
512. And, like, putting Rod on the, putting him on the witness stand would literally be, like, gold, because he was part of the LAPD, but he was hired. This was his job.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it according to, you know, the autopsy and the crime scene photos.
Yeah.
This wasn't like somebody told him and he recreated it.
No.
He did the scientific way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's like, I really want him to come to a murder mystery party now, because I want him to design our murder.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's why I said that. Yes. Oh, my God.
Rod, it is a standing invitation anytime we do anything.
So, if anyone knows him.
If anyone knows him, tell him. He's got to. I don't want to look and find out that, like, he's passed away or that.
Oh, no. I don't either.
You know me and my track record.
No trauma with that. We'll move on.
Thank you. You know, and basically they end it by, like, talking about the fact that, like, OJ, they, like, do, like, the written on the screen. It's like, OJ is out and living his life. Like, yeah, yep, he went to prison. We talked about it on Thursday, but, like,
he's out and he shouldn't be.
And, like, the thing is, like, he talks so much about, like, oh, I don't want my kids to suffer for my actions. Like, his kids don't seem to be thriving. I don't even know where Justin is, but Sydney is definitely not thriving. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, they say she's basically like a recluse. I can understand that.
His actions ruined a lot of lives.
It's very true. Before we sign off today, we have to do one more Kardashian thing. We talked about how OJ got his Twitter.
Yes.
He took to Twitter to tell people that he is not Khloe Kardashian's father.
Okay.
Because he and Chris never even thought of each other that way.
Hmm. Okay. Whatever you say.
I'm over here like, did you really need to weigh in?
Right? Like, when the fuck did that originally come up? Like 2008, 9?
Yeah, like after he went to prison. Well, because think about like the Horizon fame. I mean, I get it. She looks a little bit like his kids. But that's okay because I know Bo will hate me. My brother will hate me for this. But like, I tell him he looks like Shaq all the time. So like, just because you look like someone doesn't mean you are related to them. Because if we were exactly. related to Shaq, I would be so happy.
Oh my God, that'd be the dream. That'd be so great.
I would just be like, can you just walk behind me so I feel like a tiny person?
Oh my God. All right. Well, on that note, I think we're going to go now, guys.
We should.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep.
They're probably like, no, don't go. We love you. But we're like, no, bye-bye.
Spiraling.
It's late for me, so it's late for her.
Yep. Yep, it's late. All right. Well, go ahead and close us out, Jess.
Okay. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode and the sound effects brought to you by my horde of children cats because they are insane. I don't know what we're doing for Halloween yet.
No.
But I know it'll be really exciting.
Yes.
So we hope you find that one entertaining and you'll be back on October 31st. You'll have another patron episode. It's the holy grail of patron episodes.
Hell yeah. All right. We'll see you then, guys.
Toodles.
Bye.